25. We are in the latter chapters of the book of Acts, which of course you all realize is primarily historical nature regarding Paul's years of captivity. And so we're able to cover an entire chapter each morning with no problem. Haven't got a whole lot of that, you know, more doctrinal discussion that you see in the earlier chapters. Now, I keep putting this slide up, though. I want everybody to, remember how involved this time period is. Starting with chapter 21 and verse 27 to the end of this book covers a period of at least 4.5 years that Paul is in bondage. He's going to be writing epistles, though. He's going to be having a pretty free reign to work with individuals who want to come in to visit him. So despite the fact that he is in a couple of different places, you know, under bondage, he still is tremendously effective in presenting the gospel. Now, last week, remember, we had a lot of slides. We have just a couple here, but this is an aerial shot of Caesarea Maritima. And this particular part is a very small area within the far larger complex of the city itself. But to this day, the stadium built by Herod the Great still stands, and they have concerts there. In fact, this black backdrop is put up whenever they have an event of some kind. And so most of the time it's down. Tourists can go up on the stage, and then when they have an event, you know, they set that up temporarily. But as you come through that complex, you then come down this path like this. I showed you pictures last week. Take it from that sidewalk right there. This rectangular area, which has been eaten out over 2,000 years now of, you know, the incursion of the city, is about half of Herod the Great's original palace, which the other half, if you just got a site down here, had a large, you know, private pool for the king. And this endures to this day. Just a few columns are left, but it gives us some sense of the magnificence of the palace at that time. And then we zoom in on this area right here, which is thought to have been the judgment area throughout all the 100 years of Herod and his family's reign there. And likely the area then in which Paul will be having a couple of different meetings with Felix, with Festus, and we'll be reading about Agrippa II today. And then here you just see just a very small, you know, part, the end here of the hippodrome with that little centerpiece that the horses would run around in, the chariot races that they had and everything. Vinegar was exactly that. And then, by the way, I'm not sure if this is or not, but what are the best seats in the house in the hippodrome? They're the seats at either end where all the wrecks take place. So it's right here where all the horses and chariots and everything would pile up. People would get killed. And so those were the chief seats and the best seats. Well, naturally, where do you find them? Right next to the palace. You know, so the king goes out for his entertainment. It's just right over there and get a box seat. Actually, it's just kind of just barely out of sleep sight.
Seat sight.
Over there. So anyhow, this is the complex that we're looking at, and Paul is likely having these conversations right here in that area. This is that area today, and so this gentleman is standing, for all we know, you know, on very pavement stones that Paul himself would have occupied. Now, let's go ahead and come on over into Acts 25 itself, though. And in this 25th chapter, we have a change in the government, the Roman government, over particularly Judea, but really all of Israel too. In fact, we probably should start back up into chapter 24. Let's start with verse 24 of chapter 24. Some days later, Felix arrived with Drusilla, his wife, who was a Jewess. Remember that. We're going to come back to it in a little bit. Felix is married to Drusilla, who is a Jew, and he sent for Paul, heard him speak about faith in Christ Jesus. Paul is preaching now to a governor of Rome, an exceptionally powerful man then, and he is speaking about faith in Christ Jesus. So they weren't just passing the time of day or dealing with politics. They're having conversations that are very to the point. And of course, Paul had been a leader among the Jews. Drusilla is a Jew. She's intimately acquainted with all of these things. Likely, she would have been in attendance for quite a few of these things. But remember Drusilla. We'll come back to her in just a minute. And then, also in verse 25, next in verse 25, as he was discussing righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come, Felix became frightened and said, "Go away for the present, and when I find time, I will summon you." At the same time, too, he was hoping that money would be given him by Paul. Therefore, he also used to send for him quite often and converse with him. But after 2 years had passed, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus. In wishing to do the Jews a favor, Felix left Paul imprisoned. This guy, Felix, is not a good guy, and we know quite a bit about him because of Josephus and other writers from the time. So, this morning, I'm going to do not a whole lot, but more so than ordinary. I'm just simply reading from this commentary. So probably the last time I'll mention it to you, but just want to put it in front of everybody. Now, I've had quite a few commentaries through the years. There's an awful lot of them that are out there. But this particular one from a series called New Testament History is from College Press. If you want to jot that down, remember that. College Press is the publisher. And on the book of Acts, there's commentary on Acts by a guy named Gareth Reese, R-E-E-S-E. Highly recommend this book. It's head and shoulders above any of the other commentaries that are out there. There's quite a few really good ones, but this one, I think, just tremendously superior. So, Gareth Reese, R-E-E-S-E, College Press, on the book of Acts. Here's just a paragraph or two that he's got on Felix. Felix's first name was Antonius. Antonius Felix, now quoting, was a freedman of the emperor Claudius. The date of his appointment to office as governor of Judea is disputed, but it is somewhere around 52 AD after Cumanus was banished. He may have ruled in Samaria before his tenure over Judea. Felix seems to have obtained this appointment partly through the influence of his brother Pallas, who was a great man in the court of Claudius, the emperor Claudius. He was, this is back to Felix, he was a cruel and tyrannical ruler. He had Jonathan, the high priest, murdered by the Sicarii, which you should know about. In parenthesis, he's got a band of murderous men who carried concealed daggers, which are called Sicarius, and killing all who offended them. Felix's wife, Drusilla, was a Jewess, we just read that, whom he had seduced from her lawful husband. So there have been shenanigans involved here, and an adultery and divorce for her to marry this guy, Felix. And it says the only reason he kept Paul in jail is because he hoped he brought. We just read that. Somewhere about 60 AD, he was ordered back to Rome by Nero to stand trial for his cruelties. So the book of Acts does not give us that reason. We're just told Festus is now replacing Felix, but it's because he'd had the high priest murdered, Jonathan. Remember, there were several high priests. That one, Jonathan, had been killed. He was notorious for his corruption. The Jews hated him and had nothing but trouble with him, obviously, if he's killed their high priest. And so finally it's caught up to him. And as we open chapter 25, Rome's government is, somewhat destabilized right here because of the misbehavior of this man. And so it says, somewhere about 60 AD, he was ordered back to Rome by Nero to stand trial for his cruelties. He would have been punished if it had not been for Pallas's intervening on his behalf. We therefore date Paul's trial before Felix at about 58 A.D. That's really a pretty sure date. So about 58 A.D., Nero has been emperor for 4 years. Nero came in 54 at the age of 17. He was really young. But in these years now, these 4 years, Nero has been a really good king. And try to remember that. Our pictures of Nero, are just slavering madman, first persecutor of the Jews and all that, and that's true. But he won't start that until 64 AD. So at this point in time,
4 years off from Nero really turning bad. And it's going to be in these next 4 years that he will turn bad. I read an article some years ago, just, you know, historical information, that just praised him to the heights for being a great administrator. Nero came to be emperor very young, did very well, managed the empire greatly, and then started falling apart. The thought, you know, that he then was just cracking up and going crazy. Also have read, you know, a lot of history here, but some people suspect, and good reason to suspect, that one of the main reasons that the emperors were going crazy, you got Caligula, you got others, you know, that are just madmen, and they're so insane, is that they actually were insane due to the fact that only the richest people on earth could afford to have the first rudimentary forms of plumbing that were including metal piping. They had used wooden piping, but how long does that last? You know, so you're constantly replacing it, you know, it's not very effective. But in Rome itself, they were now starting to employ metal plumbing pipes made out of lead. Okay? And of course, we are all aware now how poisonous that is. And so these guys, though, had their drinking water flowing through lead pipes, you know, that they're drinking were apparently, quite literally, going mad as a direct result. But it's a process of time. So at this point in time, Nero's really got his act together. He's doing a good job. And he's only about 21 years old. Now, let's see if I finished what I want to do right there. Yeah, that's Felix. Okay, so now let's go ahead and turn to the next part, which is chapter 25 and verse 1. Felix is corrupt. Felix is looking for money, but Felix was interested nonetheless. So he's been doing a lot of studying, and it was fearful for him. Maybe I should just point out back in verse 25, as he was discussing righteousness, self-control, and the judgment to come. I think I did not mention this last week. Judgment to come. Scary. Okay? Yet he does not become a Christian by any means. He remains totally corrupt. What he's afraid about is judgment to come. When you and I think about anybody sitting down repeatedly to study in depth with Paul and about righteousness and faith in Christ, and then they're afraid because of judgment to come, what judgment do we think of? Yeah, we're thinking of a judgment by God, okay? Would there be reason to suppose that Paul might have been discussing a very different judgment that might quite conceivably cause Felix even greater fear? What would that be? Yeah, could hear, but...
Roman government.
Yes and no, but it would be a judgment on Jerusalem by the Romans. And when the Romans came in and they wreaked their havoc on Jerusalem, which Jesus had preached a whole chapter of Matthew 24 on that, when that takes place, if this is 58 that we're talking about, and entering, 58 when he becomes ruler, Felix, and then 60 when he's leaving now, how far away are we from the Jewish revolt that will then result in the destruction of Jerusalem? You remember when that started? 66. So we're only a few years away from Nero starting to crack up and then getting really bad and persecuting Christians. We're the same few years away from the Jews getting more and more unhappy so that they revolt in 68. And then Nero will give the order for Jerusalem. And in between, there's a lot of unrest that's going on among the Jews. Who's responsible for peace in Judea? The Roman governor, Felix. And if Paul starts telling him what Jesus had taught about the fall of Jerusalem, who would the Romans blame for the need to go to war against the Jews. The governor for not keeping peace. So I just want to lay that on the table. There's no way to tell from the text what judgment it is he's worried about. It may be the more immediate one in his corruption, in his desire for graft, you know, and bribery and all that. You know, is that he was worried about coming down on his watch if it proves to be true that this Jew who has so many followers is right, that there's going to be such unrest that Rome's going to have to come in and would have reflected on him. Nonetheless, now chapter 25, verse 1. Festus, therefore, having arrived in the province 3 days later, went up to Jerusalem from Caesarea. So he's only been in town for 3 days. He's brand new to this job. He's got a real difficult job. The Jews are notorious for their rebellions and being difficult, you know, to manage. And so he's got a hot potato here. In verse 2, the chief priests and the leading men of the Jews brought charges against Paul, and they were urging him, requesting a concession against Paul, that he might have him brought to Jerusalem, setting an ambush to kill him on the way. Now think for just a minute about this. You're the brand new governor. You're the big chief. You come into town, you know, you're going to rule over these people, the Jews. And within 3 days of you showing up, what are the Jews doing? They are in your face about Paul, and what do they want? They want a judgment for this guy to kill him, and if he won't, they want to set it up so that they'll move him back to Jerusalem so that they can kill him. How badly do they hate Paul? Brother, this is like their first order of business with a brand new governor. Haven't they got anything else to be dealing with? Is there no other thing they might be concerned about? Installing some new lead piping, maybe. You know, that'd be nice. this is the highest thing, you know, that's on their agenda. Why is that? Why is Paul such a big deal? He's been in jail for 2 years. Why is Paul such a big deal?
Christians are growing.
That's it.
More unrest.
See, that's it. It's just been 2 more years of these guys losing power and influence and watching this thing called Christianity grow. And they're holding him as personally responsible as anybody since Jesus himself. This is the guy that defected. This is the man that betrayed them. This is the one they sent out to persecute who turned out to be the great evangelist. They got nobody that they want dealt with more than him. And so it's just amazing to me that Felix, you know, killed the high priest, and he's going off, you know, back to Rome. But what's next on the agenda is Paul. So, in verse 4, Festus then answered, Paul was being kept in custody at Caesarea. He himself was about to leave shortly. Therefore, he said, let the influential men among you go there with me, and if there's anything wrong about the man, let them prosecute him. I said, all right, we'll do it. But you're going to have to do it in Caesarea. That's where he is. That's where I'm going. That's where it ought to take place anyway. You're appealing to Rome. That's our capital. Jerusalem's yours. Let's go over there. So it says, Acts 6, after he had spent not more than 8 or 10 days among them, he went down to Caesarea. And on the next day, took his seat on the tribunal and ordered Paul to be brought. So he's only been, you know, in Judea for 2 weeks. When in verse 7, after he had arrived, the Jews who had come down from Jerusalem stood around him, bringing many and serious charges against him, which they could not prove. How guilty was Jesus? What did Herod want to do and Pilate? Turn him loose. Give him Barabbas instead, you know, but we don't want to do this. Well, they're forcing their hand again. They're doing the same thing, pushing the Romans around. It's the way that it had always been, and it's the same thing. Paul's as innocent as he can be. Felix knew it.
Felix would have conversed with Festus, handing over the reins of government. Everybody knows he's innocent. So they come down with these serious charges, and many of them, but they can't prove a single thing. It all falls flat. While, and Paul's allowed to speak in verse 8, while Paul said in his own defense, I have committed no offense, either against the law of the Jews, or against the temple, or against Caesar. And they can't prove it. He's innocent. But Festus, wishing to do the Jews a favor, answered Paul and said, are you willing to go up to Jerusalem and stand trial before me on these charges? But Paul said, I am standing before Caesar's tribunal where I ought to be tried. I have done no wrong to the Jews, as you also very well know. Now, brethren, that's pretty bold. That's very emphatic. It's pretty dramatic, and I'm almost surprised, I guess, that we've seen Paul be as courageous as, you know, the lion. But to look up there, the guy that holds your life in his hands, and say that I have done no wrong to the Jews, as you also very well know, is really twisting the knife a little bit. These guys have been trying to kill me for 2 years, and Felix wouldn't do it. You very well know that I'm innocent. And I'm not going back to Jerusalem. I'm a Roman citizen, guilty of no crime, and you know it. I'm not going back to Jerusalem to face Jews. I'm a Roman citizen. Well, he's a Jew too, but he's no wrongdoer. Now, in verse 11, he says so. If then I am a wrongdoer and have committed anything worthy of death, I do not refuse to die. But if none of those things is true of which these men accuse me, no one can hand me over to them. I appeal to Caesar. Then when Festus had conferred with his council, he answered, you have appealed to Caesar. To Caesar you shall go. In a minute we'll talk about his response, but I do want to deal with verse 11 for just a minute. Verse 11, in an oblique backdoor kind of a way, I think, brethren, really solves a sort of a small problem for us and maybe a big one for our society at large. How did Paul feel about capital punishment? Is Paul a Christian? Is he an inspired apostle? Would he be a pretty good authority about whether or not with the end of the old Jewish law that capital punishment had been done away in Christ? Would he be a pretty good witness on that account? Yeah, I think so. Now here he is under charges, false charges, but for a capital offense. What does he say about capital punishment? When he says, if I've done anything wrong, I do not refuse to die, what did he just say? Capital punishment is totally acceptable to me as an inspired apostolic leader of Christianity, having brought more people to Christ than anybody else, and standing on trial for my life, I've got no objection to capital punishment. I do have one little caveat here, though. It shouldn't be used against me. I'm innocent. So, capital punishment may be great, but don't be killing an innocent man. And so, I'm appealing to Caesar. Now, in verse 12, and I realize, you know, we're reading between the lines here, the second time today, kind of reading between the lines, but trying to figure out, you know, the attitude of these men. Look at the statement. When Festus had conferred with his council, he answered, you've appealed to Caesar you shall go. What do you suppose his attitude was when he said that? That's funny because Carol, what Carol just did with whoopee, you know, is probably one thing.
through the guy's mind. Okay? It's not going to be my problem. But reading, you know, further into text, as you're all familiar, we'll get there in just a minute. Is this a problem for him at the same time? This is a huge problem for this guy. And so trying to think, you know, how would he have said this? You've appealed to Caesar you shall go. I'm thinking his attitude probably was more like, you've really asked for it. There's nothing I can do about it. And it's a problem for both of us, Paul. This is not smart. Okay? That's my take on it. The proposition that we send you back to Jerusalem, that's really wrong. But Festus did know the man was innocent. And Festus is proposing this, and he's offering it to Paul. I'm thinking Festus believed that he could get Paul off. And he was trying to take the heat off the Roman government to get it over and let it be a Jewish problem and not our problem. However great a ruler Nero might be at this point, is there any governor in the empire who wants to be sending cases to Nero? No! Because if you're sending a case to Nero, or any emperor, what are you saying?
I can't do the job.
I can't handle this. That's exactly it. I can't do this job. So, I'm dubbing it on the emperor. Now, if you don't present something to the emperor that makes it worth his time, what have you just done? What risk are you running? You're running a high risk of making an emperor who has supreme power just to kill him, and overnight you're gone. You know, you make him mad. You don't want to do this. And so it's looking to me like this guy Festus, you know, great politicians that they all would be, was looking for a way out and thinking, if I can take it back to a lower court and then as governor behind the scenes get him freed, then I can reduce my risk and get Paul off, because I very well know that this Roman citizen is what? He's innocent. Paul looks at the deal and what does he say? He says, no way, do your job. And so I'm thinking that that Carol had the right attitude. He's trying to get rid of the guy. And then Paul throws it back in his face. And so, it's gone south for Festus. And so when he says, you know, you have appealed to Caesar you shall go, I can see the wind going out of his sails. You know, you're putting my head in the noose. You know, you're going to prolong this thing. You've been in jail for 2 years already. Now we're sending you on. Who knows how long you'll be waiting to, you know, to talk to the emperor. But if that's what you want, then that's what you get. To Caesar you shall go. So in 12, then, when excuse me, in 12, 13, when several days had elapsed, King Agrippa and Bernice arrived at Caesarea and paid their respects to Festus. High-level meeting. King Agrippa. Now, if you think, here's a king, here's a governor, who has more power? What would you think between the titles? Well, a king would seem to have more power, you know, than a governor. Is this really so in the complex politics of Israel at this time? No, he's king of the Jews, and he has been conferred his kingship by emperors and inherited it from Herod the Great, as I'll explain in just a minute. So, he's got himself quite a dynasty going here, but not in Judea. And he's a puppet king under Rome's domination. So he's a powerful man among the Jews. And he is the highest that the Jews could appeal to as a fellow Jew. But he's not got, you know, any kind of carte blanche over this Festus to be ordering him around. He can't be doing that. So, with great pomp and circumstance, we will learn, he comes into town with his wife, and they're going to have the first meeting of these two. And they really want to be friends. They really need each other. Because if I'm going to stay king, is Agrippa II. If I'm going to stay king, whose backing do I need? Festus, the direct representative of the Roman Empire who conferred these powers upon me. And here's Festus, the governor. If I want to have peace and keep myself from getting killed, then who do I need? I need this Jewish king to keep his subjects in line. So brothers, this is the biggest meeting either one of them are going to have as they're starting their relationship. Now, all, you know, the stakes are on the table. We've got to make sure that we work together. So the big, you know, meeting comes in and they have their parade and all the rest of this stuff, you know, as Rome governor meets Jewish king to decide how we're going to manage all the affairs of the Jewish people in Israel. Now I want to read this again. In 13, when several days had elapsed, King Agrippa and Bernice arrived at Caesarea and paid their respects to Festus. And while they were spending many days there, Festus laid Paul's case before the king, saying, "There's a certain man left a prisoner by Felix. When I was at Jerusalem, the chief priests," see how it's plural, "and the elders of the Jews brought charges against him, asking for a sentence of condemnation upon him. I answered them, it's not the custom of the Romans to hand over any man before the accused meets his accusers face to face and has an opportunity to make his defense against the charges." Now wait a minute. Has verse 16 not happened yet? Verse 16, Paul says, or this, Festus says, "It's not the custom of the Romans to hand over any man before the accused meets his accusers face to face and has an opportunity to make his defense against the charges." Has Paul not met his accusers face to face yet? They did that 2 years ago. And 2 years ago, what did Felix conclude? "We totally innocent. But I might make some money here, and he scares me, and so I'm going to keep him." All right? Now, look at the last verse in chapter 24. "After 2 years had passed, Felix was succeeded by Porcius Festus, and what? Wishing to do the Jews a favor." What is the Roman governor really concerned about accomplishing? Keeping the Jews happy. Keep their favor. There's only one reason why Paul is here. The government is corrupt, self-seeking, and under pressure from special interest groups that they're ruling over. And that pressure is so powerful that we have to negotiate and yield to it. So, what's happening here again? The same thing. It's the same thing. So he says in 17, "After they'd assembled here, I made no delay, but on the next day, took my seat on the tribunal, ordered the man to be brought, and when the accusers stood up, they began bringing charges against him of such, not of such crimes as I was expecting, but they had some points of disagreement with him about their own religion and about a certain dead man, Jesus, whom Paul asserted to be alive. And being at a loss how to investigate such matters, I asked whether he was willing to go to Jerusalem and there stand trial on these matters. But when Paul appealed to be held in custody for the emperor's decision, I ordered him to be kept in custody until I send him to Caesar." Now, that all sounds, you know, great. Well, I'm just an innocent Roman soldier, and I certainly wouldn't want to have this guy, you know, not meet his accuser, so I proposed this perfectly reasonable thing. I was going to send him back to Jerusalem, and we would deal with it there, you know, where his accusers are. So only one problem in the midst of all of this. Felix had already decided that Paul was absolutely innocent. Festus has already concluded that Paul is absolutely innocent. Could either one of them have just said, "Paul, go home. You know, this is over. You're innocent. Go home." They could have either one of them done it. They had 2 years to do it, and neither one of them would stand up and just say, "Go home."
Why? Special interest groups doing pressure. Now, brethren, I'm going to do something really dangerous here. Truly hope I don't offend anybody. Give me a pass, you know, this one time. Very seldom would I do something like this. That's twice today. You know, you're seeing something unusual here. But it was so shocking and so stunning to me that, and I watched it very carefully, it's the best illustration, and I can't let it go. The George Zimmerman trial. This is Paul. This is it. It's the closest you're ever going to see. What did the authorities decide when they arrested Zimmerman, they looked at all the evidence, they brought in their witnesses, they did their investigation, and what did the police department decide? We're going to charge him with nothing. There's absolutely no reason to charge this man. He's innocent. And they let him go, and 2 months went by. And then what happened? Special interest groups rose up and put on the pressure, and then what happens? The next thing you know, he's under arrest. He loses a year of his life. They're threatening to put him in prison for 30 years. And we went through that whole trial, and what was the conclusion when the jury gave its verdict? Same thing. So now, we've tried to appease all the special interest groups, but what did we do to this family? For a year, they just tormented these people, ruined them, couldn't work. You know, they're just being demolished. Okay? And so what did we have here that just went down? Now, I was real interested in this. Now, as you know, I am probably, you know, I spent more time watching actual court testimony and everything. I really wanted to understand how the court system worked on this one. I've never followed a trial like that before. I would record it and watch it at night, you know, so I'd make sure I saw hours of actual testimony. I wanted to get in that courtroom and see that thing. It was the most amazing thing. I never saw anything to suggest that George Zimmerman did anything but tell the truth, get attacked by a 17-year-old kid who told him he was going to kill him, beat his head into the pavement, bloody, broke his nose, and finally, when he thought the kid was going for his gun, he pulled it and he shot him one time and it killed him. Okay? I'm sorry. I really wish this hadn't happened. And the Martin family's been ruined too. But wait a minute. When you have no evidence, and all the people whose job it is to look for it find that, you know, he's innocent, should we have a trial anyway just because we feel bad about a 17-year-old kid dying? No, we shouldn't. You've just witnessed, brother, my estimation, really dangerous. You may have a totally different opinion. That's fine. It's not going to affect this. But this is the best illustration I think you're likely to see in your lifetime of what Paul's going through right now. People pushing for political reasons behind the scenes to do something illegally and unnecessarily against an individual who is not guilty of the crimes with which he's been tried. We've just been through this. Okay? And it's terrible, isn't it? It's scary.
These leaders there in chapter 25 are very well aware in their own history of exactly the same positions what they did to Jesus some years ago. Here's an innocent man, and Pilate and Herod became friends over the fact that they got rid of Jesus in order to appease the Jews.
Exactly.
Paul's kind of in the same situation, except he has this other option. He can go to Caesar
and maybe return. That's it. And it's going to save his life. But, you know, you saw my slide with him in chains in 4.5 years. You know, it's also going to greatly curtail all of his activities. Now, before we go any farther and finish up the chapter, and I guess I forgot I was going to show you, there's that sidewalk I was talking about. So you get a side view here. This gentleman is standing just this side of where that judgment room apparently was. Okay, and I wanted you to see, though, you know, just something of how ornate and magnificent all of this would have been, you know, when it was in its full glory there. So they're in, you know, really ritzy circumstances. But one last slide. I just want you to see this Herod Agrippa II here. While we're talking about political corruption and, you know, and stuff going on. So here's our map.
Judea, Samaria, Galilee, Phoenicia, all right, and then the Jordan River flowing through here. It's everything really on this side that we're most concerned about with Agrippa. Although, as you'll see in just a second,
that two-thirds of the northern part and the west side of the river is going to be involved too. But I think it's just really interesting for everybody to appreciate right here. Herod Agrippa is only 33 years old. So I don't know what your picture was of the king and all his pomp and glory coming in, but it's no gray-haired guy, you know, with a big crown. It's a, in my view, it's a 33-year-old kid. You know, 33, my oldest boy's 34. He's still a kid to me. You know, and so it's really young. Now, this Festus, I don't know how old he is, you know, but you're looking at people who are not, you know, ancient by any means. Herod Agrippa II, and I would recommend that you use verse 13 in chapter 25 as the place where you'll put your notes. This is the only time this guy appears on the pages of your Bible. There is another Agrippa, and there are many other Herods, so they're all very confusing. But this one's kind of easy because he only appears one place in Scripture. So if you put your notes right there, you don't have it all. Number one, on this date, he's 33 years old. He is the great-grandson of Herod the Great. What did Herod the Great most notably do? Forget the building projects. How do we know?
Killing
the innocents. The killing of the babies in Jerusalem. What was great-granddaddy trying to do? Kill Jesus, the king of the Jews. His uncle killed John the Baptizer. So his dad's brother is the guy that killed John. Alright? His dad killed James in Acts 12 and arrested Peter in Acts chapter 12, same two verses, first two verses in the chapter. Is this guy going to have some insight into Christianity? Would he just maybe, you know, have some experience? Suppose the families ever talk about this when they get together for dinner? How long has this family been dealing with Christianity? For four generations. His sister was married to Felix. Drusilla's this guy's sister. Okay? Well, does she have some insight into all this then? I guess. Felix has spent 2 years keeping Paul in prison, married to a Jew who is sister to the king just up north, and has the same lineage. Well, she ought to know something. And Bernice, that Agrippa comes into town with, is the other sister. Who, history records, he's living in incest with. They go everywhere together. She is, essentially, the queen. Okay? Because their thing was really strange. This is just a great family, isn't it? This is a great family. And imagine, Paul knows all of this. And so now, here he is, and he's looking at Agrippa II. And this guy holds my life in the palm of his hand. And he's got his sister with him, and I'm just dealing with the other sister for the last 2 years. Okay? So is he really looking for a fair trial? What has this got to do with law? It's got nothing to do with law. This is personal. Now, this is also the last Herod. They're done. And I guess God's done with them. Okay? So here's where it begins. With Herod the Great. First generation. Fourth generation later, this will be the last Herodian king in Israel. So they started off trying to kill Jesus himself as an infant. And they end up looking at Paul and playing a role in his getting shipped off to Rome. Now, he was king over Abilene, and Batania, and Trachonitis, so you can't read it now, and Oronitis, which is to say, he was king in all this area up in here, which is east of the Sea of Galilee and the Jordan River, but it's up here in the northern half of what would be Israel-Palestine proper. So this is where his great power center lay. However, with the death of his brother, he got Perea and Galilee. Oops, I messed that up. But he then was also given this area down here and Galilee, all this area up here. So how much power has this guy got? He's just not king in Judea. He's just not king down in here in Samaria. It's right down in here. So when this guy comes down to meet, has he got power? Enormous power, but he's also got influence. So, what then happens is this, starting in verse, let's start 20, being at a loss how to investigate such matters, well, what do you mean a loss? You should have just cut him loose. You don't need to be at a loss to know a guy is totally innocent. Let him go. Well, I don't know how to handle this. I asked whether he was willing to go to Jerusalem and there stand trial on these matters. But when Paul appealed to be held in custody for the emperor's decision, I ordered him to be kept in custody till I send him to Caesar. And Agrippa said to Festus, I also would like to hear the man myself. Tomorrow, he said, you shall hear him. And so on the next day, when Agrippa had come together with Bernice amid great pomp and had entered the auditorium, accompanied by the commanders and the prominent men of the city, at the command of Festus, Paul was brought in. And Festus said, King Agrippa and all you gentlemen here, present with us, you behold this man about whom all the people of the Jews appealed to me, both at Jerusalem and here, loudly declaring that he ought not to live any longer. But I found that he had committed nothing worthy of death. And since he himself appealed to the emperor, I decided to send him. Note again in the middle there, he had committed nothing worthy of death, so what should you do? Release him. And since he himself appealed to Caesar, why did he do that? You wouldn't release him. 26, yet I have nothing definite about him to write to my Lord. That's Nero. Therefore, I brought him before you, and especially before you, King Agrippa, so that after the investigation has taken place, I may have something to write. For it seems absurd to me in sending a prisoner not to indicate also the charges against him. Yeah, that seems absurd to him. Is there anybody else on the planet that can seem absurd to? Everybody else on the planet. The guy's hands are totally clean. And I'm sending him to the emperor because they want him killed. How do I handle that? Beg for help from the reigning authority on all things Christian in the Jewish system. Okay? And next week, Paul will look into the eyes of Agrippa with Bernice after Drusilla. Felix and Festus. They say, here we go again. All right? Any comment or question? All right? She didn't convince.